Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Lockdown Toronto. And things have been going great so far, and I really appreciate you tuning back in. For this episode, we have a guest. His name is Christopher Hudspeth, and he is the owner-operator of Pegasus on Church, and he's also the chair of the Village BIA, that is the Church Wellesley Village, the business improvement area. And I bring him on here today specifically to speak to the precarious nature that bars, restaurants, venues find themselves in during this crisis. And given that Toronto is probably the most urbanized area in all of Canada and probably has the largest per capita range of bars, restaurants, and that kind of thing, it's an issue that is uniquely affecting Toronto compared to a lot of spaces in Canada. And I bring Chris on to help provide some dimension to the issue, and we work through it. There's a lot of other issues involved in terms of the health and well-being of the bar and restaurant spaces in the city, but we can get to those as we move on. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me tonight, Bob.
And I'm sorry, I should say it's Christopher. I keep shortening it to Chris, but hopefully you'll give me some leeway on that.
No problem.
Speak to me a little bit about your establishment and the health of it pre-COVID, and when did things start unraveling?
Pegasus on Church has existed for 25 years on Church Street. It's one of the oldest LGBTQ bars, gathering places in the community. I purchased Pegasus 6.5 years ago. I had worked for the previous owners, and at an appropriate time, I took over his leadership, and glad to have brought Pegasus along to be part of the legacy that it is after 25 years.
And obviously, it being open that long, it had to have been wildly successful and a great place that people enjoyed, a fixture in the community, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely, definitely a popular spot on Church Street, as we have several great spots, a real destination that the village is for the city of Toronto and for the LGBTQ community.
So another reason I bring you on here is also because you penned a letter that went kind of viral, got a lot of media attention a few days ago, speaking to the current issue that probably 90% of the establishments out there, restaurants and bars especially, face. And that is the issue of, the first of the month, the rent comes due, and obviously you're not making the amount of money that you would expect during this period. And the government has announced both levels of government, federal and provincial, have announced a joint program to assist with the commercial rent in the amount of a subsidy that should cover, quote unquote, 75% of it. But the issue is that process is landlord initiated. And you found yourself rubbing up against this issue directly, and you penned the letter. Can you tell us a little bit about what the letter was about?
Well, when the government announced some of their programs, we took advantage of them because they were going to help both our staff and us hopefully weather the storm. The real big gap that was left was with our rent, which is one of our largest expenses each month. And so when the governments, both the provincial and federal government, got together and agreed on a rent subsidy, we were more than happy because it was more, there was more to the program when we looked at it than we really thought the government would ever come up with. For them to pitch in 50% into the program seemed like a real wonderful thing. It all came to a grinding halt, though, when my landlord said that he was unwilling to accept the program or give up the 25% that he would be required to give up in order for the program to be to work. So it was upsetting, and the night before it was rent day, May 1st, on April 30th, I penned a letter to all three levels of government saying that the system is broken and we need it fixed. And just like some of the other programs that had been put out there and then tweaked before they actually were released, we feel the same is necessary for the Canadian Emergency Commercial Rent Assistance Program.
Now, this is an experience that is not unique to you. Obviously, I saw a report the other day that about 80% of businesses will not be opting into this. And I would imagine a large reason for that is because the landlords, one, either are ambivalent or don't know what it's about, or just generally untrusting of government in general to handle this. As you pointed out in your letter, the thing that stuck out to me was the landlord said that something to the effect of, it's government, they're going to screw it up, and I don't want to ever be part of anything that they're in charge of. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was his comment, that government programs never work, and he doesn't like getting involved with them because they never turn out right. This program, or this problem, though, is very urban centric. When I talk to other people in smaller centers, they're saying, "Oh no, my landlord, you know, he's been quite reasonable. You know, immediately, you know, reduced my rent by 2/3. He's only charging me, you know, 30%, or, you know, something like that." Or he said, "My landlord has said not to worry about it. We'll work out the program, whatever it is." And I think that in those cases, it's because those landlords are often closer to their properties. They know their tenants. You know, a lot of our landlords are completely removed. They have sometimes property managers involved who aren't really, you know, caring about whether, you know, we live or die. Sometimes the landlords are absent overseas, you know, that kind of thing.
That's an excellent point.
Walk right by you on the street because they don't know who you are.
Or in my experience in dealing with some of these landlords, some are just numbered companies with no way to get in touch with them, even to want to apply. I mean, you send a check somewhere into the ether every month.
Well, it's interesting because we've reached out to the city about this. And one of the responses of the city was, "Well, the only thing we have is an address to send the tax bill to." They don't know who the people are involved in the company. They don't have a phone number or even a physical address for them. All they have is a mailing address to send the tax bill.
That's incredible. Incredible. And as the chair of the BIA, I'm sure you've had to deal with weird situations like that as well. Explain to us what the BIA is, and a lot of people at home might not understand what a business improvement area is, but explain what it is and how members of the BIA perhaps have come together or not come together in terms of being unified on this issue.
Well, our members, a BIA is a business improvement area. So we're there as stewards of the area, trying to develop an area that is good for business. So, you know, is clean, is accessible, an area that is conducive to doing business in, and a place, hopefully, that is like Church Street, a destination where people want to come to. Mm-hmm. In our experience with our members, it's interesting because those landlords are also our members in the BIA. The businesses and the landlords are both members. But we don't have participation from landlords.
Right.
The only participation we get is from the businesses. Mm-hmm. I think our last AGM that we had a landlord at was about 2 years ago, and that was the AGM that we elected a new board. And that one particular landlord, who owns one single property on the street, an independent person, comes out every time we elect a board. But otherwise, we have no contact with the landlords as a BIA generally.
Yeah. Absentee landlords are a huge issue in the city, especially the city of Toronto. I mean, in my dealings with them, and just from my background, I've worked in municipal politics for a while, up until recently, and I actually even started a BIA, and I remember it was like banging your head against the table trying to find the contact information for some of these landlords, because they were just non-existent. It's like, is my property going up in value? Yes. Other than that, I don't care what goes on with it. And it's a big issue. But the rest of your membership, are they also feeling this kind of pinch?
I don't have any members so far that have told me that the landlord will buy into the program. Today, I received disturbing news. Now, one of them is not in our area. But a bar called Club 120, which is farther down Church Street, has today penned a letter and thrown in the towel on their business. And it's over this issue. They have a landlord who's not willing to work with them. But I also got an email from another one of our members within the village who is their landlord is threatening to foreclose on them. Or to evict them on May 16th, which is the first day they can, wow, because they have not been able to pay their rent on May 1st.
Wow.
And this is just not to name names out of school, but this is one of the largest property owners in the city, in the province, and they are just unwilling to budge 1 cent.
Steamrolling.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. So you mentioned that you penned the letter to all three levels of government. Did you get any response? What has the political support been for this issue that is arguably affecting the vast majority of properties, and not just properties, but restaurants and bars and venues in Toronto?
I got response from my city councillor, Kristen Wong Tam, who has championed this week and is pushing very hard. She is a former business owner on Church Street. She owned Timothy's World of Coffee for several years. And so she understands small business, and I appreciate it. We did get some help from our local MPP, who is also following this closely and trying to put some pressure on the government, but they are in opposition at this point, so they're not able to do more than put the pressure on, I understand. I so far have not heard anything from the premier other than a form letter which outlined the Ontario CECRA program, like I didn't know what it was about.
Right.
So it was a little bit embarrassing in that way, when I'm talking about intricacies of this program. Still waiting on a couple of others that were listed, our MP, Bill Morneau, and still waiting on something from the mayor, though, I may still hear from them in time. We'll see.
But even with all the media attention,
the 15th of May is coming.
Yeah. Even with all the media attention, you haven't received any pressure?
Just the ones I've talked of there. And I've heard a lot from our customer base, of course. I've heard from my staff, from other staff, other business owners. But, I'm still waiting to hear from some of the politicians, the one who can actually do something about this. We just want a fix.
Yeah.
Some fix.
So when we're thinking about fixes, if you had a magic wand, how would you not completely gut or throw out the current program, but what would be the quick fix for it at this point in time?
Well, if they were unable to mandate the landlord into taking this program, then, they've put aside the money already. Somehow give the tenant access to that 50% so that we could actually pay the other 50% and still be not in arrears.
Right.
If they're not able to do something to pressure the landlords, that's fine. I get it. You know, the law can only take us so far sometimes, but you've put aside the money. So give us a way to access it, an either or. Mm-hmm. The landlord applies or the tenant applies, one or the other. Sort of like what they did with the CERB, where you apply through EI or you apply through the CRA, one or the other, but not both. And, you know, that would still be reasonable. Mm-hmm. It's not what I'd like to see. You know, after 6.5 years of owning Pegasus, you know, I worked out the amount that the landlord would lose if he was to accept this program. So if he was to accept the program, he would lose 0.01% of everything that I have given him in 6.5 years. That is so minute that it's ridiculous that you wouldn't want to put that back in to make sure that you have a tenant down the road a few months from now. And so it's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, that is incredible. So it seems like they are just, and I've mentioned this in other with among other guests, that they're kind of living in this weird bubble where they, it's almost as if they don't want to be forced to do anything, and they see it almost in a way that the government is forcing them to do this, and meanwhile it's reducing their choice, or they're opting into something that they don't know the downstream effects of. But I have no idea what it is, but it seems as illogical to me as it does to you. Do you think the program, though, was almost designed to fail, given that, yeah, let's put aside this money, let's look like we're doing something, but let's make the hoops just small enough that people won't be able to, or the landlords will not want to jump through them?
Well, they say the program is having about a 20% success rate. That's not a success, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that rate is only coming from small centers. Like where I said, you know the landlord and he says, you know what, if that program's going to help you as a tenant, I'll do it. You know, mm-hmm. what? I can give up a little bit for a little while in order to make sure that, you know, we have you down the road. But it doesn't happen in urban centers. And the people are just, the landlords are just unwilling to, one, I think, afraid to open up their books, you know, because there may be scrutiny later on because of the program.
Yeah. Right.
The other is that, you know, they feel they should still get 100% of their money, because on paper they believe that's what it says, even though I have zero income.
Right.
So, you know, it they're certainly not playing fair. Mm-hmm. But they have this belief that they're still, even during a pandemic, entitled to 100% income no matter what.
So in essence, you believe maybe, or it's probably apparent, that the government did not take into account the different landlord-tenant relationships that exist in a big city versus a smaller urban center. And it's more a case of oversight than perhaps willful negligence or willful crippling or sabotaging the program,
the disparaging, the difference in rates of rent as well, mm-hmm. would make a difference. You know, yeah. Small center, it's a smaller amount. They're giving up a smaller amount, maybe.
Yeah.
That may be a part reason why in urban centers it's being less accepted.
That's insightful.
You know, we're still talking about small amounts when you're talking about a tenant over a longer period of time.
Right.
You know, lots of these places have existed for long periods of time. Maybe not 25 years, but, you know, you had a tenant for 5-10 years. That's a good tenant. We want,
right.
You know, most landlords would want to keep them. And you would think that most landlords would do something to encourage them to stay with them.
Especially in an environment where the market for rental and commercial rental has fallen through the floor, among other markets. It's almost like, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, and they're not really seeing that. But it's very disappointing.
Well, in post-COVID.
Yeah. Exactly.
Post-COVID, even worse, probably.
Yeah.
With a lot of empty rental spaces and nobody to fill them because people are afraid to make ventures at that period.
Right, right. And the entrepreneurship spirit is probably going to be really dampened for at least a few years, just given the nature of the virus, the embedded fear among the population, and the recovery timelines that people are seeing, and until a vaccine is widely available. But I want to shift gears a little bit because there's also another issue that's uniquely affecting restaurants especially, and that is the current reliance on mobile apps to order delivery. And I see news reports that a bunch of restaurants are trying to organize for a boycott day on Wednesdays where they turn all the apps off and they encourage people to order from the venues directly because the cost structure of the apps, the pricing, what it's costing the businesses may have made sense when they had full restaurants, but in this environment where they're not allowed to open their doors and they're reliant on the delivery apps to drive their business, it is sinking them, in essence. It's basically taking way too much from the till. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
The delivery apps, I think, were a great way for restaurants to have a second income, sort of a side income that once all the bills had been paid, once the overhead was covered, it gave them a little extra in the purse and a little more cash flow, mm-hmm. which, in instance were good when you had an operating business. So that was wonderful. But as the only business, they don't work. The models aren't set up for that. The fees are high, especially in some apps. We've seen that some apps are charging the restaurants much more than others.
Upward of 30%, I've seen.
Yeah,
we've seen
as high as 30% in wine. That's a huge cut. One of our local restaurants has tried to cut out apps as much as possible and is cutting apps out once a week. They're doing their own local deliveries. So within a close radius of the village, I know that both owners and some of their staff are doing deliveries. So that's O'Grady's on Church Street is doing that, one of the pubs, and I applaud them for it. I think that coming out of this, I can see a number of maybe local restaurants trying to band together to maybe create their own delivery system within areas. I could see some of our restaurants getting together and doing that, maybe doing contracts with delivery people or something,
or maybe even the BIA banding together
we've had some BIAs who are talking about maybe something where we could do some sort of delivery sharing program within the BIA itself. So yeah, we're looking at those options. Of course, it's especially noticeable at this time because, like I said, those delivery apps were not made. The whole structure of them is not set up for being a standalone service. It's great if it's a second part to your business, but you have to have the overhead covered first.
So in the meantime, if these apps do, if the boycott or the suspension or the limited boycott of these apps start working, what is the alternative there? Do you recommend to people to establishments to not use them altogether or just continue using them at least to keep some money coming in the door?
Well, I think it's all individual, depending upon location and how it's working for them. But I think they really need to look at it specifically and see that it works for their business mm-hmm. and works for their business model. I think some of them are going to have to think outside the box, like O'Grady's did, and provide their own delivery, which for them is now put more money in their pockets. And mm-hmm. at a time like this is extremely important for the cash flow. Got to pay those rents.
So I guess also the lesson for people watching, don't use the apps. Call the place directly, do a pickup, try not to be lazy about it. And you might find that the business has pivoted in order to maybe have some of their employees do deliveries or limited area deliveries. So it's important to shop local. It's important to patronize local establishments, but also don't include a multi-billion dollar international conglomerate corporation as a mediator between that, because they are taking upwards of 30%, which is insane and entirely unsustainable in my view, in terms of this crisis. I mean, to their credit, they say that they've reduced fees for people. They've waived the startup costs for establishments that want to use these apps, but still when it's being charged on a per order basis and they're taking the lion's share, such as 30%, it's just an unsustainable model in and of itself. So it's a good lesson learned. So moving on a little bit, how do you see the general future and health of the restaurant or entertainment industry even going forward over the course of the next year? Let's just try to imagine a year from now. What do you see happening if things are currently as is?
Well, without a vaccine that is widely distributed, I believe it's going to be a slow recovery for the hospitality industry. That's restaurants, bars, hotels, tourism. These areas are all going to have be impacted greatly and are going to have a very slow start. I think lots of us will have reduced capacities to start with. As we, take it gently, we're most certainly going to be in the third wave of opening, many of us, maybe some restaurants earlier, but then again with very limited capacity. But bars and other gathering establishments of similar nature are certainly going to be in wave three. And we don't know when that will be, because wave one hasn't started yet.
Yeah.
So far it can't start before May 20th because the emergency order is now up to and including May 19th.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it technically we could start seeing wave one come in sometime after that. I do think that we're going to be cautious in Ontario, in Canada, to open up slowly, especially when we see our neighbors to the south opening up quite quickly and their numbers are rising in some of those areas already, and they've only been open for a matter of days now. I can see it being a very slow opening, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we're able to find out more about herd immunity, the possibility of a vaccine, or even at the very least some really good viable treatments for COVID-19.
Right.
So without those things, though, it's going to be a slow happen.
Do you see yourself being open in a year? If, let's say, May 15th comes and goes, your landlord is not pushing for eviction, but he's also not opting into the program. Maybe it's just a holding pattern for everyone. What do you see happening there?
Well, at present, we paid the rent. It's been tough. We will hopefully be able to do that again, but we have to watch. Mm-hmm. We've projected for a little while to see at what point it doesn't make any sense. And, we're constantly updating those projections as we get more information and and see what we're qualifying for and what we get accepted for in some of the programs, as well as, you know, what might change in this program prior to May 15th and it being actually rolled out. I do still hold hope that, like some of the other programs, like the CERB and the other loan programs and wage subsidy programs, they all have had minor issues to major issues. And in all of the cases so far, we've seen some pretty big tweaks to the program, either as it, you know, once it was being introduced or just after being introduced, they've gone back and fixed a few things.
Yeah.
So I can only hope that with all the attention that we're trying to bring to it and how important it is to so many small businesses in urban centers across the country, that the government will find ways to tweak it. We can't end up as a country, as a society, where only large corporations own the businesses and the streets are just full of chain stores and big box stores and, you know, franchises at the most on the street. It will completely change and undermine communities and sense of community, the feel of a neighborhood, and warning to landlords, if it's just a street of chain stores and boarded up locations, your investment is going down.
Yeah,
this is not going to help your investment. Your land is the value is going to drop.
Penny wise, pound foolish.
Boarded up locations.
Yeah, and it's incredible the myopia that's happening at that level. Is your establishment currently opening or doing deliveries on some limited level?
We do not have a kitchen at Pegasus, so we're just a bar, and so we don't really qualify to do the deliveries. Mm-hmm. I guess you know, some have tried to get away with. I'm not sure how legally, you know, they've sold, you know, a 6-pack of beer with a bag of chips, but I'm
can
not
of
sure
beans
that's,
I used to see back in the day.
You know, I'm not sure that's the right thing to do, but
right.
we don't really have a customer base who's looking for that kind of thing.
Right.
If we're already a restaurant doing food service, you know, to be able to add some beers to that food order and things like that, you know, I think are great. And, you know, like I said, I've watched the government make lots of great changes. At this time, I'm proud to be Canadian, to have watched all different parties put their politics aside and really come up with some really great things and a really great safety net for Canadians.
Yeah,
I just hope that they will do this for small business as well.
Yeah, it seems like small businesses are, it's some weird sticking points. Like, they don't want to budge. I've just heard no movement. I haven't heard the media asking, you know, the prime minister or the premier pointed questions about the program yet. And it's weird. It's very weird that this is the one thing that they aren't getting right in a time when it just would be very easy to get it right. Moving,
and we employ so many people and good paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
These are not necessarily, you know, just the minimum wage jobs. You know, my employees are very happy to be working for Pegasus. I have now 3 employees that have been with me 5 years plus. One who has been there, I think it's now 12 years at Pegasus, works with me. And these people get benefits. You know, I'm an employer that provides them with you know, extended benefits, which is not a normal thing for
not at
most
all
bars or restaurants.
Yeah.
So, you know, the, like I said, independent small business is good employment, and good employment that's going to disappear.
Not only that, with the focus that the government, especially the provincial government, is having with slow reopening, let's reopen the economy, we're going to be doing it slowly. And that's, they're answering those questions almost on a daily basis. If there's nothing left to reopen, if these businesses will die within the next month or two, close up shop, as we're seeing reports daily of long establishments in Toronto closing up shop, shutting their doors because they don't see a way out. What is the point of reopening things if you're just reopening into a pit of economic depression anyway and lack of employment? I mean, business improvement areas especially are an incredibly rich source of employment area, is what the planning term is, because they employ a lot of people locally, and they create good paying jobs and a sense of community, especially when you have something as organized as a BIA. Christopher, can you please tell us if there is an online petition, if there are support, community support systems that people can opt into or look? I will link them down below, obviously, but if you could walk us through some of those.
No, both Kristen Wong Tam, kristenwongtam.ca, there's a link to supporting small business on her website. The Ontario NDP also has a link on their website. Let me see, ontariondp.ca/supporting small business. Mm-hmm. There's also a petition there. Both of them allow you to write to your members of parliament, both provincially and federally, and get the message out that you want to see small business in your area, and that you want your government to support a modified CECRA program so that it works for more small businesses. Currently, it's working for less than 20%. Less than 20% is not a win.
Right, exactly. Christopher, I really appreciate you coming on the program this evening and dedicating some time to us. Keep fighting the good fight. If people want to get in touch with you, I mean, they could email the program directly, or if you have a social media presence or something that you want to put out there, you can feel free to.
They can reach me through the Pegasus on Church social media, or through the BIA at, they can email me at christopher@churchwellesleyvillage.ca through the BIA. So.
Great. And I'll be linking all those in the show notes. And again, I thank you very much, and I hope you take care, and I hope things work out well on this issue for you and for everyone, and the government sits and listens on this one. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I look forward to reopening and being able to sit and have a pint with you at some point.
That would be excellent. Have a good night.
Thank you.